The 96 on City Talk 105.9.
The Saturday night when we went home, me and the wife, and just went home, and we sat and we watched the news, and we just, you know, broke down, two of us, for some time. When you realise, when it starts to really hit home, then got up next morning feeling numb, and you don't know what to do. Then you're listening to the radio, you're watching the television, people are putting flowers. So I just went and got a bunch of red roses and took our Joanne down and just didn't want no fuss, just to show me respect, you know. And just a couple of papers got pictures, which I hated. And then the next morning, as I said before, we went down to Sheffield, to the hospital.
Kenny had organised everybody, and all the people who were injured over in Sheffield had gone to the hospitals over there. So we'd made we'd organised things, and we'd got as many shirts, as many sort of memorabilia from the souvenir shop, pennants, pictures, whatever we could get our hands on. And we travelled over from Anfield to the hospitals, and it was, you were hoping that the people who were in there, everybody was going to be all right.
Tubes, machines, people dying. We were all speaking to these kids, people in comas. There was policemen as well that were in there, whether it was trauma from the event or they'd been hurt trying to get people out. But we all tried to, they just said, speak to the people who are in comas. And there was just one kid opened his eyes and looked up. It was one huge positive on a lot of negatives. You know, it was just great to see something that coming here had been worthwhile at least.
Ian Clark, consultant anaesthetist, charge of intensive care. Two of the boys we had stopped the sedation on, they'd been on a breathing machine since the event. When the Liverpool team arrived, there was quite an amazing response, in that particularly one of them woke up instantly and was instantly conscious and alert.
Actually, at that moment, was incredible, and it flew round the hospital that this had actually taken place. It was like it was a miracle. And I would like to think it was that. And is that if the lads, Kenny, played one small part in what happened to bring somebody out of that coma, and I just think it's something magical.
There's one or two of them that haven't flickered an eyelid or moved a finger. And it's more or less a pep talk from the players, from Jockey Hansen, from McMahon, saying, hey, come on, enough's enough. Start showing us you're alive there. You know, even if it's just a blink or move your fingers. So come on, you know, we know you're alive, but you've got to start helping yourself out now.
How long do you think you'll stay?
Well, I'd like to see all five of them come out of a coma. So hopefully when these people wake up, I can go home.
They were waking up out of comas as to whether they were actually going to wake up without us anyway. But, you know, the families were saying, we'll talk to him, and, you know, with your voice and stuff like that. So, but the amazing thing with a few of them actually was the look on their faces when some of them actually woke up out of comas, and they had not a clue what had happened. They didn't know that probably there was even a semi-final and this had happened. So therefore, all they're doing is waking up and seeing Ian Rush and Kenny Dalglish and Alan Hansen in front of them. And they're like, what's going on? What are you all doing here? Type of thing, you know. So that in a funny sort of way, even the families and people like that were laughing, because it is a strange situation when you know what's been going on for the last 3 days, and someone who you're willing to wake up and say, oh, John Barnes, how you doing, what's happening, sign an autograph, what about this, and until they actually know what went on, you know, the initial reaction of them was just was a bit strange.
The one thing for me that I'll always remember is when a doctor said to me, there's a young lad there, he's only 13 years of age, can you just go and talk to him down his ear? I said, yeah, oh, no problem whatsoever. And his family were all around him. And I just whispered in his ear, you know, when you're ready, we'll come to Anfield and look after you, you know, we'll get some tickets and look forward to seeing the players. We hit a ball, a pit, this, that, and the other. And just talking, whatever I could, for a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever it was. And then when I walked back to the doctor, I said, "When do you reckon the lad will pull through?" And he went, no, he's not. We're pulling off the life support machine this afternoon." He killed me. Absolute. For want of a better word, he just cut me in two. Absolutely cut me in two. And that was the end of me for some weeks.
The one that'll stick out to me now and is the young boy Lee Nicol. His mum knew and was told the players were coming along. She couldn't do anything more for him that day, and she knew. And she just waited and she kept him alive on the ventilator and what have you until we'd actually been there, until the players had gone in to see him. And we'd all split up and everything, and mum was sitting there right next to the bed, and it was unbelievably emotional. Just sitting there and you're going like, "Dan, you're thinking, this woman was, she was stronger than any one of us." We were all in tears. We were there and everything. We held his hand and we came away from him. And she was stronger than us. And we were like, "Dan, we were in buckets." And I was like that. I was thinking, "How's this woman doing?" She was the strength. She was the strength there and then. And she said, "I just wanted him to stay until you come." She's idolised all the players. It was, you know, you've gone in there with thinking that he's going to come out of this. He's like in a coma. He was dead. It was just too hard to actually take.
Kenny spoke to a kid who woke up out of a coma straight away, which was amazing for us to see. But then you told the kid over there he's going to have the machine turned off this afternoon. It's so hard. And then I get back and there's a kid from Warrington, Ian Whelan. Ian, Ronnie was his nickname. And I'm reading this in The Echo, and it was then, that was the first time I really, really broke down. Went after the hospital and then found out this kid had died. I eventually got through to his mum and dad. Just basically saying sorry for what's happened. God knows how I did it. I went through directory inquiries and I didn't know the dad's name. I just knew it was Whelan Warrington. Somehow I got the number. I found the number that night and phoned him. I felt I had to, because it was Ian, Ronnie Whelan. Ronnie was his nickname, and I was the player he looked at, and I felt I had, by somehow, I got the number in the end and I spoke to him. I was glad I did speak to them in the end as well. Helped me as much, hopefully, I helped them a bit.
I think everybody changed. Kenny for himself, you look at the managers that have been through tragedies at Liverpool, Joe Fagan. Joe Fagan wouldn't have left if it hadn't been for Heysel. Who knows if Kenny left because of Hillsborough? I don't think so. Kenny's a strong character.
I don't think there's anything that Liverpool Football Club could have done about it. I don't think. It's right at this moment in time, you point the finger and blame any body or authority of who's to blame, start discussing that. I think at the moment it's right to sympathise with people who have, as I say, suffering a greater loss than us.
And he was fantastic on the way that he handled everything.
The efforts with Kenny Dalglish and what Marina Dalglish can never, ever, ever be understated. They were absolutely, they were giants. They were giants on behalf of the football club. And I think long term, I think it affected Kenny in making his decision to walk away. I really do. They were like Trojans for people. It was open house, as I say, and a number of people who came through that players' lounge and near the rooms which are just off it. It was astonishing. We welcomed them. There must have been a million cups of teas made to try and make people just feel a little bit better.
It wasn't just me or Jockey Hansen who were like supposedly captains or whatever. I think everybody helped people, players, everybody seemed to join in and help each other to try and get through it.
Kenny Dalglish was unbelievable, you know, the way he overseen everything. And I think he'd done everything spot on, meticulous, as Liverpool always did. We all done the right things. But I think at the end of the day, the only thing we never did, perhaps at the end of the season, was hung a council ourselves.
We'd all arrived at Anfield, everybody, we'd all gone, everybody was suited and overcoats, and we'd come to the ground, and like it goes down now, and the Salvation Army had turned up, and they were outside Shankly gates and everything, and they were playing, and Peter Robinson allowed them in and opened the gates. It was open house. The stadium belonged to the fans more than anybody.
Everybody was blown away by the fact that it started on the cop, the few flowers that came, and then it just filled the pitch. But it wasn't just people from Liverpool, it was people from all over, and not just Liverpool fans. It was every conceivable fan, whether it be Scunthorpe, Manchester United, Preston, Burnley. People came from everywhere. I think because they knew, being football fans themselves, how they would have felt if it had happened in their city or their football club. And when the pitch was just full of flowers, that was just an unbelievable sight to me. All the pitch up on the cop was just unbelievable to see that.
Seeing the cop go tied up and the flowers surrounding the perimeter fence. It's one of probably the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. But in its own way, probably one of the most beautiful as well. I think it signifies everything that the city of Liverpool stands for. I think it's totally unique. I don't think there's any other city in the world that have responded and reacted the way that this city has done.
We all went down the tunnel, out onto the cop. And we all went there, which all the memorabilia and everything was just starting to build up over the crushed barriers, flowers being laid in the goal, on the goal net, scarves being. And this was just the first day. And going onto the cop, I couldn't help it. I had to walk away. I just broke down in tears. And I'm looking round at the other players, and there's fans, grown people who were just standing round the cop, probably where they stood every week or whatever, or where family and friends did. And those people just absolutely sobbing.
And you go up and you'd look, you'd just sit in the stands and watch the people come in and get a cup of tea and watch them laying the flowers, you know, even from Man United. And people from all over the country, when all of a sudden this shrine was erected, you know, on the cop and in front of the cop. And it was very fitting. It really was very fitting.
Of course, there was a beautiful element. There was a bonding of football fan, which was incredible, which you never thought would happen. The Everton team and Manchester United team and everybody came and paid their respects. I used to go up every day and sit in the director's box after we'd done a bit of training or whatever we'd done, and I'd sit up there for an hour just watching people come from the Anfield Road end, walk right along in front of me. Big men, huge men, carrying a red rose just to come and lay some flowers on the pitch. And this started as a trickle, became a tidal wave. Just people just coming all the time, people, grown people, kids crying. And then people started to come from all over the country, bringing scarves, Wolverhampton, Spurs, Bristol, whatever. There was people, different people, coming all the time and just laying there. So it brought the whole of football together. It united people.
I've always known that about Liverpool, the city of Liverpool, as opposed to, you know, Glasgow or London or Tottenham and Arsenal, whereby, you know, you don't have, it's not as intertwined, if you like, in terms of even families supporting it. It's not a religious divide. It's not a geographical divide. It's really a real eclectic mix of people who, for whatever reason, one brother may support Everton, one Liverpool, which you don't really get anywhere else in the world.
Players would have broken down, and they did, because it was like losing one of your own family. You must understand, when you played for Liverpool Football Club, the fans become an extended family of your family. So if you in a disaster like that, you're losing one of your extended family. And it is hard. Everybody broke down. I'm not ashamed of saying, yes, I broke down. Of course I did.
Football had just gone out the window. Football is just... And you thought, when can we ever start playing? And as days went by, and again, you're talking, you're taking the family's advice and what they felt and everything. And as the week went on and the funerals, I think I went to about eight funerals, something like that, which was extremely difficult. But it was part, we all split up. We went in threes and fours to the funerals. You looked and you wondered, is it worth it?
It was really, really tough. And then after that, then the funerals started taking place and we had a meeting and, you know, we were told best thing to do it is to be there for people who need you day in, day out. So we didn't train, we went into Anfield and we sat counselling and talking to people who'd lost loved ones. And then the funeral started.
I mean, I went to 12 funerals. I'm not the best at these sort of things because I don't think I'm very strong emotionally. And they were getting worse and worse for me, you know, every one of them. You start off thinking, well, five, by the time you get five or six, you get used to it, but it was just getting worse in the end for me.
You're just on automatic pilot. You get up, you know, you're doing a young lad's funeral, then the afternoon you're doing two sisters. The next day you're doing two brothers from Netherley. You're doing another one in the afternoon. Then you go on and doing a son and dad. And then you're doing another one in the afternoon. And it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. I've never cried so much in my life for a week.
The amount of people that we went to the funerals and to visit after, it did affect us. And if you hold it inside you, eventually you will get breakdown in some way. And it's better to get and to break down in that way earlier, as we did, as we were talking to the victims and of the disaster, rather than later.
No, you're hearing the stories of these Liverpool mad supporters, how they went to watch them play and they never returned home, and then at the end they put walk on, and everyone in the church breaks down, including yourself. And it was like it was just repetitious with everyone. And it was, you know, when you look back, you know, it was. How did you get through that? You know, I was one of those. We all, to be fair to the players, you couldn't have done no more than what we did, I don't think.
It's a game, isn't it? It's only a game, really, at the end of the day. It's football isn't that important. I know people love to go and love to support the team, but it's not that important that people have got to die in a football match. For me, it's not that important that people... One life. It's just... unbearable to think about a person dying at a football game for no apparent reason, but so many to die at Hillsborough, there was no point.
The 96 on City Talk 105.9.